Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
Now I'm going to hand over to Kevin Campbell-Davison. Just a few words about you, Kevin. He is an embodied teacher specializing in education, children's development and human flourishing through movement and play. He was a movement teacher in Steiner Waldorf system for 10 years. And these days he delivers teacher training and self-development programs for Bothmer Movement International. It doesn't end there. Kevin is also an associate lecturer at Goldsmiths College, where he facilitates embodied and playful modes of learning in higher education and is working in partnership with Bournemouth University on research into mindful resilience and gaming. And finally, he's an embodied artist and can jump really high from a standing position, which is my favorite fact about you. Kevin, it's really nice to introduce you. Kevin and I know each other from a previous life, and it's just a total pleasure to hand you the floor.
Oh, thank you very much, Kat. Thank you so much for having me. It's so lovely to be here. It's so nice to see some friends in the front seats here. It's really good to see you. I saw you wiggling your fingers, getting your hands ready, which is great. Wendy's hands, she says that her hands are a little bit tired as she's been doing loads of crocheting. That sounds like a great way to spend your time. So I want to say thank you to everyone who's created this opportunity, to Kat, to Yanina, who's here supporting me, and all of the leadership team from the Embodiment Conference. What you're doing here is incredible, and I think you must be sleeping not very much to make this possible. Yeah, pinning your eyes open. It's really, I feel very grateful. And so we're going to talk about the hands. When I first designed this talk back in June, we all thought, so I'm coming from the UK in Bristol, I should say that. So we're still kind of going into second wavy type stuff. And when I first thought about this, I never thought we'd still be in this kind of situation. So I redesigned the talk and said, how do we reconnect our hands in these times when COVID's this strange COVID environment that we find ourselves in? And later on in the session, we're going to look at this incredible piece of research, which is actually the largest piece of research that's ever been done on touch. It's great to see some more friends coming in at the front there. Hello. You're filling me up with joy seeing your faces. And we're going to look at this piece of research about touch, which is really fascinating. And so I think we'd start just by doing something nice together with our hands, which is very simple. But very lovely. And we're going to rub our hands together. I've got these lovely cheeky little monkeys here doing all sorts of handy things up at the front. That's great. you can carry on doing that all session long. Rub our hands together. Feel that nice warmth. Feel your shoulders relaxing, dropping down your back. And then we're going to take that lovely warmth and just place it on our hearts. And feel that warmth spreading through our body. Close your eyes if you want to. It's kind of lovely to sit in silence together for a moment. And one more time, rub your hands together. And then this time, I'd like you to place this lovely warmth somewhere where your body would like a little bit of kind, loving attention. So anywhere that where that might be for you. Got some people going for the shoulders. Yeah, shoulders is a good place. Got some people on the, oh yeah, in the sockets of the eyes. That's nice. And if you want to start to squeeze and rub a little bit, that's all good. Do what you need to do. If any noises come out in the privacy of your own home, of course, let them rip. Okay, lovely stuff. And if it wants to be a little bit of a shake at the end, or take it where you want it. Okay. All right. So, okay, so I'd like to just maybe just take the temperature of the room a little bit and connect with you. I want you to think of what was the last person with whom you had human touch? The last person with whom you had human touch. And just reflect on that. Maybe take yourself back there for a moment. And if you're willing, you could pop that in the chat, and it'd be interesting to see where we find our touch at the moment, who in our lives is giving us touch. And possibly we're, oh, a long hug a few days with an old friend. Oh, wow, Kat, that's really moving, actually. I just felt quite touched living alone, that hug. Yeah, and the hunger touch is something that comes up in this study. This hunger for touch is something that people are really experiencing at the moment. My friend's 10-year-old daughter. Wow. I'm actually feeling quite moved just reading these things. Isn't that interesting? The power of cuddles, Joel, my companion. My beautiful son or hubby, don't remember which. My teenage daughter. Before she went swimming 20 minutes ago, my dance partner, so delicious. My beautiful 3-year-old nephew, my husband next to me, 8 days ago. Oh, Yvonne, I'm going up, my heart's going out to you there. Let's all give Yvonne a bit of a virtual hug. And this is actually something that, another thing that comes up in the research, that if we can imagine the tactile experiences, then it actually has an impact on our well-being. My wonderful boyfriend, Tim, moving together and touching. Yeah. So if we can imagine that, it actually, if we can stretch our imagination and train it, perhaps we can support ourselves with that. Oh, Yvonne, I'm going to start crying in a minute. That's beautiful. Well, we're all sending you a big hug out there, and I hope you're okay. I hope you're well. I hope you feel even weller after this session. That's what I hope. Okay, and I'd like to also ask you, if you have a connection with children in your lives, so whether that's as a parent, as a teacher, as an uncle or an aunt, or some sort of extended family, just give me a little yes in the chat, or you could tell me if you want to, you could tell me who that is. And the reason I ask this is because in my work, I'm really interested in the space between adults and children. I'm interested in the development of human consciousness, and I've worked with children a lot, and I find it endlessly fascinating to see how a child's consciousness changes as they grow. With children, it changes quite fast. You get to kind of like witness it developing slowly and slowly, and this space between adults and children I find so rich. And when we can find ourselves, when as adults we take ourselves back to a kind of childlike place, maybe through, I do a lot of folk dancing and singing, and we kind of reach this other space, I feel like we can connect with all other humans at a very deep level. So that's kind of what I'm really passionate about. Yeah. Oh, Yvonne just mentioned her cat. Now, another thing that came up in some of the research I've been doing is that one of the good things that happened with COVID is all of the animal shelters no longer have animals anymore. because people, in their longing for touch, have gone out and taken in homeless animals to their homes. So that's one of the positive things that's happened. That's great. So a little bit of thank you very much for your interaction. As you can tell, I really love responding to that. So it's great. Thank you very much. And we'll do a bit more throughout the session. I'm going to try and weave together sort of talky bits and thinky bits with doy bits. So we're going to go into a brief outline of the session. We're going to look at some slides just for a moment, just for a short time. We'll play a few games. We'll follow a little thought experiment. Then we're going to look at three qualities of the hands, which I think come together to make hands such the profound things that they are. And then we're going to look at this wonderful study that's been done on touch. And then finally, we're going to share ideas about how we can reconnect our hands in this. I was going to say, when I said after COVID, I'm like, well, it's like through COVID or like during COVID, right? Because maybe there is no after, or the after is a different after, who knows? You know what I'm getting at. Okay, so if that all sounds good, then we're going to start with the slides. So Janina, may I invite you to draw up the first slide, please? So there's my cover slide. Is that a bit blurry for you, or is it all right for you? Bit blur. Oh, there we go. It's just popped into clarity for me. Yeah. Is that good? Cool. So Bothman Movement International is a movement practice that I'm trained in, and we'll do a bit of that later. Hand Cue is a project that I've founded to play games through the hands, and we'll talk about that later, and then it's Goldsmiths. So before we go to the next slide, I want you to clear your mind of any all the knowledge that you know, because I'm going to show you a picture, and I want you to imagine you'd never seen the picture before. Some of you, it's possible you may never have done, but if you have, imagine you hadn't seen it before and you don't know what it is. And I want you to just think of what would you call this image, or what would you, either a title, or how would you describe this image in a few words? Okay, that's your task. So let's go to the next image, please, Janina. So looking at that image, what title would you give it? And initially, just in your own mind, come to a title. And then I'm going to ask you to write it in the chat, but not press enter. So to write it in the chat, but not press enter. And so now what we're going to do, so I've never done this game with so many people. So this might, I won't be able to read out everyone's, but we're gonna together create a collaborative poem about this image. So when I say 3, 2, 1, go, you're all gonna hit enter. And all of these words are just gonna sort of tumble into the chat, and I'm just gonna kind of scan through them and read them. I would like to read all of them, but I'm not sure if we'll have time for that. So it'll be more of a kind of like leaping from stepping stone to stepping stone, a kind of a process. Okay, so if you're ready, 3, 2, 1, and go. Wow, can't keep up. Contact, touch, flying touch, magical connection, I give you life. Reach out and touch, touch hands, longing connection. Seeing, feeling, connecting, be in touch. Connection, minimal, intense touch, one small connection point. Connection attempt, reach the divine touch. I want to touch you. Connection, father gives to son. Gentle angels in the sky, my mum in the Vatican and me. Zing, touch the heavenly light. Your touch. Cool, very nice. I was able to do all of them. And that was a very nice collaborative poem that we just made there, everyone together. It's really cool. Yeah. I like the way that that game, it just gives something which just appears from nowhere and is, and then is gone. It's really cool. Okay, thanks for joining in. So this image, as a lot of our comments suggested, focuses on the place where just between the two fingers there. And this place is actually a very special place. And I'm going to lead you now on a little kind of thought experiment, or some research done by Gary Meisner, among others. So if we go to the next slide, this point here is actually a very important point between the two fingers. So Janina, if you could be so kind, we go to the next slide. If we look at this, there's a very particular place between where these two fingers touch. And there's a proportion or a relationship between the different parts of this painting. And if we go to the next slide again, please, Janina, then we can see that if we divide B by C, we get the same result as if we divide A by B. And this result is known as the golden ratio, or the golden mean, or also sometimes known as the divine proportion. If we go next slide, please. So often it's represented by the Greek symbol phi, which you can see here. And that number is 1.618. So this relationship tends to this number. It's an irrational number, so that it doesn't ever end. It just carries on going forever and ever. This irrational number, this number of phi, is very kind of special, because it lives all over the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, according to Gary Meisner's research. Incidentally, if you look into the etymology of the word divine, so this divine proportion, if you dig, keep going backwards, you find the root of divine is the place where we shine. The place where we shine. And I love that, and like thinking of the hands as this place where we shine, and this connection with the divine, or this something else, or the deep mystery of being human. So if we go on a little bit, now I'm going to ask you to go on me in this little journey through these other images. So yeah, this image just shows us that if it was 1.6, it would be just in the wrong place, because it's exactly on the divine proportion. It goes right between the fingers. And that place between the fingers is about one finger's breadth, about 3/4 of an inch between the fingers of, well, it's God and Adam. This is obviously a picture by Michelangelo on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. And possibly one of the most famous images in Western art. And if we go on to the next slide, please. There's the whole ceiling. See if you can spot the image we were looking at there. It's just right of center. And I don't think the idea is that Michelangelo measured this and got this bang on, but more just that he thought his sense of what looks right and where the focal point of this painting should be just happened to be at this special place. And next slide, please. And if you look at some of the other paintings in the Sistine Chapel, this is where God created Eve. Again, the hands line up along the golden ratio. And next slide, please. And that's where God separated the heavens and the earth. Next slide, please. And this is where God separated the dark from the light. And next slide, please. And this is someone having a bit of fun with it. So I'm bringing this to you in really quite a playful way. I'm not suggesting that this is necessarily true, more just that it's interesting, and it's an interesting way for us to get into this idea of the golden mean, and also its connection with hands, which we'll come to. So let's carry on a little bit again. Now, the golden ratio also relates to the Fibonacci series, and the Fibonacci series is 1, 2. If you add 1 and 2 together, it makes 3. If you add 2 and 3 together, it makes 5. If you add 3 and 5 together, it makes 8 and 13 and 21 and so forth. And this Fibonacci series we see throughout all of nature. It's just everywhere. in the number of petals on a flower. Next slide, please. If you use the ratios, if you see this little drawing down on the right-hand side here, that's using the numbers of the Fibonacci sequence to draw a series of rectangles. And if you draw a spiral around that, you get the spiral of a shell. We also see that spiral in other aspects of nature. Next slide, please. And I mean, you could spend hours and days researching this stuff, and there's all sorts of beautiful and wonderful things you can find. But for now, I'm just going to skip over a few things. We've got the galaxy, we've got hurricanes. Next slide, please. We've got staircases. And so what is it about this, the proportions of animals' bodies? And next slide, please. And next one, please. So what is it about, and pause here for a moment, please. And we also see these proportions in the human body, as Leonardo da Vinci discovered and portrayed here in this, I think it's Vitruvian Man, I think you call it. And yeah, so we can, for example, one of the ones we can see in our hands is that the distance between our finger to our wrist is, and the distance between our finger to our elbow accords with the golden mean. And we see it in the face, the proportions between different parts of the face. So it's everywhere. And of course, it's approximate. None of us have a perfect body. You can measure yourself up if you like and see if you do indeed have a perfect body. But it's a fun experiment if you ever find yourself with a few some time to spare. But yeah, we see this all through the body, and it almost feels like, I like connecting this with this idea of divinity. It's something trying to express itself in nature and in the world. It's kind of one of the mysteries of the world for me. What am I doing next? I've just got my notes here. Next slide, please. So this is a drawing by Leonardo da Vinci of the hands. I'd like you now just to take a moment to give yourself a little hand massage. I think it's quite nice to look at this image while we do that. You could get your fingers in between these lovely long bones running down the hands. Maybe getting your thumb into that big muscle there in between the thumb and the index finger. That often gets a bit sore, that one for me. Whatever you want. And another of my favorite ones is splitting the fingers like this. If you just split your fingers, you get this nice juicy stretch between the hands. And in a moment, we're gonna see how the divine proportion spirals right into the, you could even say it spirals out from the fingers. That's almost like the beginning of our, if the humans are spiral, the beginning of that spiral is at the fingers. I'm going with Janina on a bit of a, I love this. Whenever you see someone stretch on camera, you just like, you kind of want to do it. There's that mirror neurons or something that just makes us feel good. Cat's doing the aeroplane, nice. that's really cool. Okay, so then next slide, please. If you do this with, before you do that, hold out your index finger and then curl it into like a little spiral and do that. Now you can see approximately your finger represents this spiral. So there's the beginning of that's where your divine light flies in through your fingers. And then if you do the next one again, please, we can get the fist. You see the spiral a little bit more there. So there we go. Now, if you measure this, which I have, it isn't exact. And that doesn't mean there's something wrong with your hand. It just means that this proportion gravitates towards 1.618. So it doesn't start there. It starts off more like 1.6 or somewhere around there. And it gravitates towards that as we get bigger and bigger and bigger. So next slide, please. What have we got next? Oh yeah, cool. So Bill Bryson's written a book on the body, which is interesting. And This feels like a nice summation of what's so incredible about the hand. In each hand, you have 29 bones, 17 muscles, plus 18 more that are in the forearm but control the hand, 2 main arteries, 3 major nerves, plus 45 other named nerves, 123 named ligaments, all of which much coordinate their every action with precision and delicacy. It's incredible, isn't it? And it gives you this incredible understanding of what your hand's doing all the time without you realizing it. Please make a fist. And we can cut the slides now, Janina. Thank you very much. And if you squeeze your, if you put your hand on your forearm and squeeze your wrist, you can feel the muscles there, those 17 other muscles, working as you just squeeze your fist. It's incredible, all the different integration that's happening when you do that. And if you then run your hand up to your wrist here, another incredible facet of the hand is this, look at this tiny little wrist that we've got here. All of that information travels through this tiny little gap. How, you know, all those nerves and ligaments, it all goes through this tiny thing. And not only that, it's incredibly mobile. You think like, well, if you're going to design something like that, it's going to have to be pretty like pretty sturdy and immobile, right? Look at it. It goes round and round. So it's incredible that all this stuff can just find its way through this tiny little wrist here. So we can marvel at the hand. And I hope you come away with this, come away from this session with a sense of wonder at your hands. That's one of my intentions. If you please touch your finger to your thumb, this is ulnar opposition. This is one of the, we can do all sorts of things because of our ulnar opposition. We've got these incredible muscles in the thumb, which means we have a power grip and also a precision grip. So we can crack an egg. Think about cracking an egg. You have to do it just the right amount. And the fact we can crack an egg and we can hold it and then dunk, just the right amount is this incredible sensitivity we have in our thumb. Our thumb can be very strong and very light. And this feather touch we have, it's incredibly sensitive. And that's one of the incredible virtues of the human hand. If you let your hand just sort of flop a little bit, you'll even see the spiral kind of coming into your fingers there, this kind of spiraling gesture in your fingers. The fingers don't come down straight, they spiral in. And this, the hand, because of its infrastructure and because the thumb is actually on the side, the thumb's not really going that way. Although I'm not very good at drawing. If I drew it like that, I would draw it like up, but it's not really, it's kind of on the side. And this architecture of the hand gives us incredible adaptive potential because the hand can mold to anything. The hand can really mold to lots of different shapes. I cut out there for a second for me. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, the hand can mold to lots of different shapes. And this adaptive, got you, Kat. Yeah, this incredible adaptive potential, it's really what marks out humans, not only what's incredible about their hands, but what's incredible about humans themselves. If you think about the other locomotive elements, the equivalents of other species, we have wings and you have fins, and these things are really highly specialized for specific types of movement. Wings are great at flying, much better than hands, much better than arms. Fins are great at moving through the water. Yeah, exactly. And we mirror these when we try and fly and swim. We mirror the animal kingdom. But what the hands can do is they have this adaptive potential, this creative adaptive potential. So they can mold themselves to everything. And similarly, humans have got this adaptive potential. Humans are niche creators. We don't fit into a niche, we make our niches. So humans have got this incredible ability to continue being creative. And that's really, I think, where I'm taking this bit of the talk is this human quality of creativity, in the sense that I'm talking about this integrative, adaptive potential that we have. I'm going to share a game later that I've designed for children, which I'm going to share with you at the end, I'm always thinking about hand games as one of my things. It's like sharing hand games with the world. Hand games, can you give me a little yes in the chat if you played hand games in the playground when you were younger? Oh yeah, I can see some up on the panel. We've got lots of these going on. In fact, we can have a little hand game at the front. By hand games, I mean these sort of hand clapping things. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. Yes, Sophie. Yes, Tara. So lots of people play hand games when they were younger. And these things, we would sing along. Yeah, we would sing along all the time. A sailor went to sea, 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 to see what he could see, sea, sea. But all that he would see, sea, sea, was the bottom of the deep blue sea, sea, sea. Exactly, all the time. But I'm sorry to say that these hand games are, there's a danger they might be dying out because children don't play them in the playground so much. I know, bottom lip, so everyone, absolutely. So I think that I really feel this draw towards keeping these things alive. So I've gone around collecting them up digitally and creating a video library of hand games. And that's one of the things one of the projects I'm working on is to keep these going. And also to have children at the leading edge of hand games. I learn them from children. Children are the experts at making hand games. The purpose of hand games is they carry folk traditions through the world. Children take what they know and learn, and they put it into their hand games. They change the words. They make the words rude and edgy and funny. And it's brilliant. It's this place where the children's creativity and just utter wisdom just shines through. You give them a hand game and they just make it their own. So one of the things, that's Wendy says she's a dinner lady and she's never seen them played. We need to introduce them over lunchtime. Yeah, okay. Well, that would be great if you can, I think that if we can find ways to bring these things back into the world, I think that's one of our, as embodiment teachers or people who want to bring movement into the world, we can find ways of bringing them in a normal way. Because let's be honest, for some people, if you go up and go, hey, do you want to play a hand game? They'll be like, not really. So how can we bring these into the world? And in my work, because I work with adults and parents who are interested in children, because of all the things that I'm talking about, it's like, yeah, this is a really meaningful thing to do. It's a thing which brings together three different aspects of our human hands. And that's what I'm going to talk about now. So I want to move to the next section of the talk, looking at the time. Okay. So bringing together three aspects of our hands I'm going to talk about. Agency, or our volition, our will, is the first thing. Our thinking and our feeling. And I think the hand games bring together our volition, our agency, our thinking, and our feeling. And the way they integrate those makes them such a powerful thing to do. So let's just look at these qualities in the hands briefly. First of all, if you look at your hand, if you imagine grabbing a rope and just squeeze that rope and you're going to pull that boat out of the water. I'm going to have to stand up for this because I really need to. So as I do that, I get the rope and I pull it and I put my will behind that. Yes. Fantastic. Upper panel. I'm loving it. We've got lots of lovely rope pulling going on here. Very good. And so when we do that, you see the whole of your body, all of the attention goes into your hips and even maybe your jaw clenched, I don't know. So you see this volition, willpower kind of running through your body. Fantastic. You can put your boat back again. So we've got this, and this part of the hand here, this willing gesture, this pulling, this like, I'm here, I've got you, you're coming with me. This kind of feeling, it's we've got that sort of part in this bit of our hand. We use this bit here when we pulled these big muscle here, this power grip, we call it. So we've got the willing part of the hand, or the agency part. Then second, we've got the thinking part. So when we think with our fingers, we go, we turn the pages of a book. We distinguish between this thing and that thing. Is that that or is it that? We even say it in our language. I can't quite put my finger on it. I can't quite, you know, we got this thinking with the fingers, and we even have dexterity, this word that lives with both dexterity of mind, dexterity of nimble fingers, nimble mind. It lives in our language. The fingers think, they distinguish. And then thirdly, we've got the feeling component of the hand. And if a child falls over and hurts themselves, we stroke them with the palm of our hand, this kind of palm quality. We stroke with the palm. We stroke with the palm. So we have this feeling quality here. So the thinking, the feeling, and the willing, the agency. So I want to talk briefly about a little bit more about these. I'm going to run out of time. Lego's great. And one of the things that Lego, if you think about Lego, isn't Lego such a fascination? It brings together these three things. You can see how when you watch a child playing Lego, they especially when they're making up their own thing, they're just like, they're putting it together. They're creating anything they want. It's coming from them. It's coming out of them into the world. They're putting their will into the world. It's very tactile. So they're getting all the bricks and moving them around. And it's also, because the bricks have got different shapes, there's an element to which they kind of, they're thinking with the bricks. That has to go there. That's too short. That's too long. The little bricks have to connect into each other. So Lego is one of those things that kind of captures this integrative activity. Using weaving and crocheting, that Wendy mentioned earlier, knitting with your fingers, these kind of activities which bring together sensory, tactile experience with embodied thinking and with making it yourself, bringing something into the world, bringing these things together, this integrative activity is deeply nourishing for human development, I believe. There's a quote there, I'm not going to read it. So let's talk a little bit about agency. Let me just check in with time. So I've got 13 minutes left.
Yeah, 13 minutes if you want to give 5 minutes for Q&A at the end.
Okay.
Otherwise 18 minutes, no questions.
Okay. Okay, I'll just race through it.
Yeah, and you said that you would be willing to be available in the coffee break afterwards for questions if we don't have time for them in the session, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for reminding me, Kat. So there's a coffee breakout space, and we can, if you want to chat about any of this stuff, we can do that after the session in there. So this agency, actually, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a nice movement thing with you together. I was going to talk more about this kind of bringing together this this agency with this thinking and feeling, but I think that I've made that point. And someone just says that be aware that coffee break are also with others from other channels. Thanks, Stefan. Cool. So I think what I'm actually going to do is share a movement practice with you, which I think would be a nice way to finish. Oh, what I do need to do is talk about, yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll talk about the touch test. So the BBC touch test, this piece of research I mentioned, it's the largest ever research into touch that's ever been done. 40,000 people responded to an online poll between January and March 2020, over 100 countries involved. And it was actually focused initially on unwanted touch following the Me Too movement. But obviously it just ended just before we had this funny no touchy thing come along, just ended just as lockdown began in the UK. So it's kind of really interesting piece of research. In a nutshell, the results found, you can check it out yourself. It's the Touch Test, BBC, lots of nice documentaries on Radio 4. And someone said it'd be interesting if they do it again. Wendy, thank you. There's actually been some studies that have done since that during the lockdown, which also are quite interesting. In a nutshell, the results were that touch is associated with higher well-being and lower loneliness. Well, no surprise there. But there's some interesting parts of the discussion that came up, which I thought I'd share. The truthfulness of touch, one of the things that came up. So the example that they gave in the discussion was when Jesus is resurrected, Thomas asks to touch the wounds in his hands. You know, he wants to touch it. Just, I don't want to see it, I want to touch it. And in a sense, touch gives us this very direct relationship with something, this checking of reality, this truthfulness. Is it real for me? It's authenticity that comes with touch. And also, touch is one of those senses where I do it. With eyes, it comes to me. And with hearing, it comes to me. But with touch, I have to reach out. If I'm the one touching, I reach out towards it. So it's this kind of, it comes from me. It has this agency built within it. There's an amazing play that was done called That Kindness, Nurses in Their Own Words, by the playwright who's known as V, formerly known as Eve Ensler. And she looks at how nurses, the awful position that nurses have been in, where they can't touch their family, although certainly it's a risky thing to do, and not being able to touch their patients with skin contact. And she makes the claim that this COVID experience has been, to some extent, a weaponization of our bodies, because our bodies can cause other people harm. They can kill. And it's this, and this funny feeling that we might be getting. I mean, I know for myself, I'm curious to know if anyone else has had this experience of, like, I go to touch someone and I have a little kind of weird little kind of shudder, because I know that, no, that's, I can't just do that. And you have this strange thing coming in with touch. Yeah. Some people had that same experience. And it's funny, right? And that's for me as an adult. I mean, how is that affecting children who can't necessarily understand this in the same way that we can as adults? It is weird. It is really weird. I was working in a school at the beginning of September, and a child was balancing on a massive tractor wheel and they fell off. And I ran over there to comfort them. And I had, again, that little like, oh, am I allowed to do that kind of thing, which is really weird. And I did. But it's just this kind of funny little voice or part of us, which now is present. And so what do we do to address that? I guess that's my question. And that's not a question we're going to answer in the next 9 minutes, 10 minutes, but it's something that we're going to, I'd love to have a space to throw in ideas into the chat and also carry on this conversation. Other brief results from the survey: not everyone likes touch. 72% did. Factors involved with that were extroverts and introvert personality and also attachment style. Anyway, I won't go through. This is a good one. Let's do this live with everyone. Do you have enough opportunity to touch people these days? If you can either put in no, just right, or too much. And we'll see what we'll do a quick bit of research here. This is a question they asked in the survey. So we've got some no, a lot of no's, a few yeses and just rights. So, okay, great, thank you. So in the survey, they find 54% of people had not enough touch. And so I'm not surprised here at the Embodiment Conference, our rate is higher. We're probably up about 80 or something like that. But also this was done pre-COVID. So, you know, the results may have been different since then. And then why do we not have enough touch? And the three main reasons that were given in the research were consent, which is something that is talked about a lot at this conference. And there's some really, really great practitioners on how to negotiate consent and how to be really clear about that. Lack of social interaction was another reason given, and the changes of attitudes in society. And I actually think that one thing that strikes me recently is that this new thing that's happening now is that we do ask people if they want a hug. It's completely normal to do that now. And, you know, in the past, I felt it can be a bit of like, oh, shall I ask that? Is it weird to ask that? But no, it's so abundantly clear that it's good to ask that. You know, we've got a chance here to make consent, asking about consent, really normal. And that's great, because it means that we can know if we want what sort of touch that we want, and we can ask people what kind of touch they want. And that's what we need. That's one of the main barriers, is consent. So I feel like we have got this great opportunity to ask people if what kind of touch they'd like, because it's really normal now because of COVID, and because everyone's doing different arrangements with their bubbling and their da 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 da. So I think that's a great opportunity. There's a nice little example that came from the study. The Radio 1 DJ Greg James said that he's been carrying around a cricket ball in his hand and in his pocket wherever he goes. It's been like recently during COVID, like, why is he doing that? And he then suddenly realized that that's what he used to do when he was a child. He used to carry around a cricket ball wherever he went, and just having the feel of it in his pocket gave him something. And I think that's a really nice example of how we could perhaps think of objects that we can carry around with us as kind of little, like a little special object. It's almost like that, like the baby blanket, the transitional object, that's what it's called, that the baby uses to transition away from the parent, something like that maybe. But we can carry that around and have this little, and just like fiddling with that or holding it could be a really, really a nice way for us to cope with the stress of what's going on and to actually improve our well-being. Exercise and touch are two of the main things that can help increase our well-being, according to this study. Emma says her friend was doing that with squash ball recently. I like squash ball. Not only is that much more practical than a cricket ball, but it's not, the feeling of a squash ball is really good, right? It's kind of like firm but soft at the same time. I love that, Emma, thank you. I'd like to, if anyone else would like to, any other ideas for how we, other strategies for how we can keep touch alive in ourselves and to sort of cure this touch hunger that many of us are experiencing, please do keep throwing them in the chat. I'll gather them together and share them on the Facebook Intimacy and Relationships channel to keep the conversation going. But yeah, thanks so much. And it's really cool. Another one, I want to play with your weight with a wall. Oh, that's a good one, Stefan. Thank you. Yeah, like rubbing yourself against a wall kind of thing. Fantastic. That's a really nice one. Hug yourself. That's a really good one. I hope I'm saying your name right, Liv. And one of the things that came from the research was that if you imagine the last hug you had and then hug yourself, that actually they find measurable and benefits from that. So tactile imagination is one thing that can be really important for our well-being. Tactile imagination. So if we can imagine touch, that actually has an impact on our bodies in this healthy way. Janina has a love affair with the floor. That's great, Janina. Braid one's hair, lovely. Thank you very much, that's interesting. Barefoot walking, cool. Prana bath, rubbing our hands together and then stroking all over your body. That's really nice, Jesse, thank you. Now, these are really great ideas. I'm feeling them all throughout my body at the moment, actually. It's really nice, so thank you, everyone. It's really good. Tending to your plants, yeah. That was another one. Someone said in the research, gardening without gloves is that earth thing, that touching the earth. It's really good. Massage your head, yeah. Massage your head is lovely. Hug each other's back. Oh, interesting one. Hug each other's back. Is that like face to back? That's interesting, Lee. I've never seen that one. Yes, cool. I actually did that with when I was saying goodbye to someone. We thought a face-to-face hug was a bit more facey, breathy. The back hug can be an alternative to that. So it just feels a bit safer, doesn't it, I suppose, because your face aren't going together. Spoon hugs, nice. Who doesn't like a bit of spooning? And how do we normalize these things? That's the thing, isn't it? How do we make them, how do we ask for consent in a way that feels normal and fine and bare against a tree. That's nice. You can even use a real tree as well. You get some different texture. Back hug. Yeah, you've been doing that with your grandma as well, Lolita. That's cool. Nice. Fantastic. So, okay. So what I want to do is finish up with a little embodied practice from Bothwell Movement, which is this movement practice that I've been fortunate to train in. I want to give a thank you before I do this to my teachers, to Martin Baker and Susan Kelly and Rob Sims and many others, because a lot of the things I'm sharing with you are things that have been shared with me from them. So yeah, thank you to them. Oh yeah, somebody knows, you know Martin Baker, yay! We've got another Martin Baker fan down there, cool. Okay, so what I'd like you to do, you can do this first one sitting down, and then you can do both of them sitting down actually if you want to, but okay. So what we need to do is pick up your imaginary cat. So I'm going to stand up so you can see. I've got my imaginary cat here. I'm just laying that on my lap, laying my cat on my lap. I just do that. So I've got my cat on my, it's not working, is it? So I've got my cat on my lap here. And I'm just going to stroke my cat from the head down to the bottom. I stroke my cat. I feel soft, warm fur. As I stroke, my cat starts to purr. I can feel a soft purring against my legs. Her warm body and her soft purring. It can be a doggy, Lolita, absolutely. If you're more of a dog person. And fill your imagination with this feeling of this cat beneath you. And this warm body, smooth fur. There might be some of that thing where some of the fur molts and comes away as you stroke. Feel the way your fingers slide between the shoulder blades. And its purring becomes louder and more contented. And then, in order to give your other hand to have a go, just gently lift up your cat, very gently, and turn it around and pop it back again. And then let your other hand have a go, running from the head down to the bottom. and we can feel the undulating flesh of the cat. Isn't that a nice onomatopoeic word? The undulating flesh, the muscles, the bones. And in Bothma movement, we call this our listening palms, our soft listening palms, as we give our care and love to another being. And then I'm going to gently put my cat to the floor and keep in my palms the echo of this, of these listening palms, these soft listening palms. I'm going to stand up so I can show you better. You can stand up if you want to, or you can stay where you are. And I'm going to put my soft listening palms against my heart. And just connect with your body a little bit. Connect your feet on the floor. Notice where your feet touch the floor. Allow your shoulders to sink down your back. Then I'm going to imagine that my palms are the sails of a ship. And the wind blows and moves my palms away from my body like this. The wind fills the sails of my palms. And then my palms go out to the side and become the ocean. Rest your arms on the ocean. Imagine the water coming right up to your heart. And then slowly let your arms come down through the water to the side. And then once again, place your soft listening palms on your heart. Be with yourself for a moment. Be with yourself. Give yourself the soft listening attention. And then slowly we're going to move out into the world and bring this into the world. As our sails fill with wind, our soft listening palm sails drawn out from our body, drawn out towards the horizon, and then brush your hands across the surface of the water if you are standing in water up to your heart. And then as your hands slowly come down through the water, feel the support the water gives you. Relax your shoulders. One more time. Soft listening palms, being with yourself. Taking this love that you have, we all have this intention, this desire to bring the best of ourselves into the world. And so then as the wind fills your sails, let that love expand and grow, and then bring it out into the world, share it with everyone. We all have so much to give. And then letting our arms slowly come down the side. And fingers relax, shoulders relax. Take a breath. Thank you very much. Please have a seat. So that was a little bit of what we call Bothma movement, or some exercises inspired by the principles of Bothma movement. And if you're interested in finding out about more about that, please get in touch with me. And I'm going to give you some information about how to contact me in a moment. But I'd like to hand over to Kat now.
Thank you so much. I want to echo the comments that are coming through on the chat of just about how wonderful that was. I knew it was going to be good. Thanks, Kevin. I almost didn't want to stop you. I'm going to make a couple of announcements, and then I'm going to hand back to you for a final question. Yanina is very kindly putting in the chat links to you, your website, and how people can get hold of you. And like you said, you want to mention something about that at the end. So just a few final announcements, folks. And I'm being gentle with my, I'm not being quite so loud with my voice because I know that we're in this quite sort of sweet space now. So just a couple of things. I said at the beginning, I'm going to repeat it, this session is available for 48 hours on the portal and also in the Facebook live stream. So you can watch it a few times, maybe come to the practice a couple of times. After that, as you know, it's available to buy. So you can upgrade, and Janina will pop the link in the chat for that, to buy the session, the whole channel, or the whole conference. There's a couple of reasons that you might want to do that. So first of all, there's a lot of sessions happening. There's a lot of information coming. And we know that the way that we kind of integrate this work is through sort of practice and reflection. So purchasing the package gives you time to kind of come back to this a few times and time for your body to kind of integrate. The other reason is that as a thank you to us, really, as a thank you to the team for putting this conference together, most of the people who work on it are working voluntarily because we care about getting embodiment out to as many people as possible. And so we're almost at break even, I think. But if you can afford it, paying for some of the packages just helps us keep doing this work, really, and keep getting embodiment out to as many people as possible for free. And if you can't afford it, totally cool. Watch it on the free replay for the next 48 hours. So it's a kind of model based on kind of kindness and soundness. If you want to contribute, you can. And if you can't, that's totally cool. We still want you to have access. So that's it from me. I want to come back to Kevin for one last question, which is something that we're asking all of our presenters, which is, what is your top tip for staying embodied? And then you can also share anything else that you want to share to the audience. I just want a quick thanks to Janina for teching in the background, and thanks to everyone for coming. But back to you, Kevin, your top tip for staying embodied.
Top tip for staying embodied. I'm going to say, because it's this talk, I'm going to quote John Lennon. I'm going to say, love is touch, touch is love. I want to share that. And I want to just briefly mention some other things that I've shared, my website, my email address if you want to get in touch. I've made a little course, which is how to create a hand magic show, which is for 7 to 10 year olds. And there's a special discount today, so you can get it for 75% off just for today. And you can also see, I've also sent a link to my hand cue project as well. That's the things that's in the chat. Yeah, we go. Janine has just shared it in the chat. So if you put in this code, TEC2020MAGIC, and click on that link, you can get that. And so basically, it gives you all these little hand games that you can then weave into your own little magic show and ta-da, present it to someone. And the last thing to say is thank you to everyone, to all of my friends for coming, and everyone else who's come. I really appreciate it. I feel your support so strongly. I'm being very happy, so thank you.
And I think we shared the link to the coffee rooms. You said you might go and hang out in that for a while.
Yeah, there's also
the Facebook thread where this video has been live streamed, and we'll put your links in the thread of that as well for those people who weren't in this version. And I think that's it. There's a few things coming up later on the channel that you might be interested in. Melissa Tofton is doing an empath guide to polyamory. We've got Carlene Cabiro doing a session on jealousy as a gift. And later we've got Guy Sengstock doing a session on the circling method. So yeah, I hope you find that useful. It's been really nice to share this space with you. Thank you again to Kevin for a gorgeous session. And I think we're all in reverence of our hands a little bit more than we were at the start. Let's give Kevin some love from the balcony. We're gonna close the room. Kevin, if you need to reach out to me afterwards, let me know.
Thanks.